Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the Toy Department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
It's Toy Department time, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. And I said to myself before this episode that we were going to just kind of really start to just try to jump in to the meat of the show, you know, right away, get to all the stuff. But that's not going to happen this episode because we're doing this a little bit late today.
And I feel I should say that not only what you're talking about, but all delays on today's podcast are brought to you by the Kolsky household.
And what were we doing in the Kolsky household that we couldn't do the podcast at a normal time?
So listen, I mean, here's what happened. I had an appointment this morning, a chiropractor's appointment, because I am in terrible, terrible shape with my back. It's really very bad. And I said, you know, rather than rush it before my appointment, can we do it after? And so when I got home from my appointment at like 11, we had planned to do the podcast at noon, and it is my an off day for me. So one of my other plans for the day, well, I had two other big plans for the day, three actually. One is to bake cookies for my wife, but I'll do that later. The other two were to open a fruit that has been in our kitchen that I've never had before that I was excited to try.
Open a fruit?
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Okay.
And to make baba ganoush. And I figured an hour was probably enough to make baba ganoush. I had the eggplants ready to go. I just had to roast them, scoop them out, and make baba ganoush out of it.
By the way, you could tell me literally anything was in baba ganoush. If you were like, I had the kumquats ready to go, I would not have questioned that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's baba ganoush is really just hummus with eggplants instead of chickpeas, right?
Okay,
so,
gotcha, okay.
In my yard, I have a lemon tree for the lemon flavor and a eggplant tree, a Japanese eggplant tree, so... that leads me to how it all became a disaster. First, I preheated my oven to 450 degrees. What I did not realize was that my child's nanny had made beans in a frying pan for he and his baby friend that hangs out all day, and had left said frying pan with some leftover beans in the oven. So imagine my surprise when my smoke alarm started going off, not all the way through the preheating. I thought to myself, what could be smoking? And in fact, it was a frying pan full of what at that point looked like a brownie, but had at one point been beans, which I then rushed out of the house into the backyard because it was essentially not burning, but, you know, smoldering. So that delayed the process slightly. And then... I also over-roasted the eggplants, so I turned what was supposed to be like a good pint of baba ganoush into less than a cup of it. But I am rather pleased with the results, and even more pleasing was the fruit. Have you ever had a pomelo?
Can't say that I have.
So the wife and I were at the grocery store, and as you know, California grocery stores will occasionally surprise you with some crazy fruit that you're like, what's that?
Yeah, clearly.
And it's... It was a huge, it was with the citrus, but the size of a human head and green, and it's called a pomelo. And I was like, I don't think I've ever had that before. Let's try that. And so upon opening this pomelo, it looks like inside, it looks like a gigantic red grapefruit, like truly the size of a human head, red grapefruit. But the taste is just, there's no bitterness whatsoever. It's like a sweet, gigantic grapefruit. It's quite wonderful.
I'm just happy to see that you're making the most of your pandemic, really.
Yep, learning new things.
Out there exploring fruits and harvesting your eggplant trees.
Mm-hmm. Learning new things, harvesting.
And Baba Ganoush, yep.
That's right. Yep. And I learned some valuable lessons about Baba Ganoush, but the like small ramekin full of Baba Ganoush that I ended up creating is pretty tasty.
I'm just sitting in here in my apartment watching television.
Well, I mean, that was the last 4 days, so I figured I should cook today.
We'll get to that in a second. I do want to remind everybody, this is a Tuesday show, which we used to do all the time. We're going to do entertainment content today, and then there will be a Thursday challenge show as we get ready to watch that tomorrow night. So all kinds of fired up for that. But let's let's jump into some of the content we watched at home this week.
Yeah, kind of it was practically all movies, right? I mean, we could start with Euphoria because technically that's not a movie, but it was sort of a mini movie, wasn't it?
Kind of a mini movie. I mean, you know, maybe a bottle episode, which I think is sort of the format that you would expect for a semi one-off, because I guess there's another one at some point.
There's another one late January that is going to be a different person's perspective.
On that conversation, which you know, is a device they use in that show.
I don't know if it's going to be the conversation. I think we're going to get...
Or that day.
Rather. Yeah, that day and like where Rue and Jules' relationship is. I don't know about you, but this was in many ways totally different from what Euphoria is. But spiritually, obviously, you know, a spiritual sister, if you will. And I thought just a remarkable performance from two really, really good actors.
Yeah, who was the guy that plays her sponsor?
He has an incredible name that I always forget. It's like a Spanish name. Hold on one second. I want to say it's like... I'll just sound racist if I try to guess his somewhat Spanish-sounding name. Cast. His name is not on that list of cast.
Okay.
Coleman Domingo is his name. Coleman Domingo.
Coleman Domingo. Yeah, I thought he was excellent and really kind of interesting and layered.
Yeah.
As the sponsor. The episode is really, I mean, it's mostly just a single conversation in a diner booth.
Yep.
You know.
Did you watch the like behind the scenes content? The like 7-minute.
No. Was it about how they filmed it in the pandemic kind of situation?
No, it was more about why. It was more about the point of it and what they were doing with this. And I found it very interesting. Essentially, the idea, and I thought it was incredibly well executed, it definitely gave me the feeling they seemed to want, was, you know, so much of Euphoria is about the visuals and the experiential elements and the, you know, everything is happening a mile a minute. And this was actually a scene in season 2 that they just blew out into an entire episode. So instead of, you know, jumping and moving and, you know, crazy visuals, this was sitting in a booth really digging into the characters. And I just thought, I mean, yeah, Coleman Domingo is fantastic, but I continued to be blown away by Zendaya and how, like, she's a Disney kid, for God's sakes, and she just has this character nailed.
Yeah, it's almost right. I mean, like, I didn't mention that because it's such the, like, the first thing about this show, right? It's like how well she just inhabits this character.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, to me, it's step one. But yeah, it's obviously there. And certainly in a scene like this where you really kind of get to stretch out, mm-hmm. you can see that on her. She takes this kid who really, I think if you encountered Rue in the world, the last thing that you would think is that she has this lush and well thought out interior life, right? You know what you know what I mean?
Totally.
And she provides that for her And you get to see that, but without it feeling like it just feels natural and weird or normal. You know what I mean? Like it's an effortless, I think is the word I'm looking for there.
Yeah.
And it's a really interesting performance. I think she really does a lot with her face and posture.
Yes.
Particularly in this role. And even her hair a little bit.
Totally.
It's just a really thorough performance, and obviously at times requires going to some really deep, serious emotional places. And at times you see those things, but it kind of lurks underneath this really placid surface.
Yeah. I mean, I forget what it was that we talked to. Oh, it was the flight attendant where we were talking about, like, it's a lot of face acting for Kaley Cuoco, and I think the same is true for Zendaya in Euphoria.
Yeah. And she, you know, I think deserves all the credit. I think the other thing about Euphoria that's still good and still evident to me, even in an episode like this where you talked about the visual palette of the show kind of changed, the audio palette of the show, and particularly the music and the use of music to sort of set moods.
It was amazing. The scene where
really strong.
Yeah, the part of it where he goes outside and you're hearing the phone call, but looking at Rue and the music. It's really excellent. This show is really very good, and I like that this episode sort of said, yeah, like we are really good at the visual stuff, but like we're packing an emotional punch too.
Yeah, I think a lot of people. When they talk about this show, it's a lot about the tone and the subject matter and how it hits them. You know what I mean? And yeah. I think maybe they're missing how well constructed the show is and how that construction allows it to maximize some of those hits, you know?
That is extremely well put.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to the Jules part.
Me too.
For sure. So it'll be interesting to see. I'm curious as to what you thought of Let Them All Talk, which if you want to segue into the movies that we watched this week.
I do. Spoiler alert, I liked everything this week.
Everybody can tune out now. We're good.
Yeah.
Fast forward to homework.
Let Them All Talk was the one I think I could understand people not liking the most, if that makes sense. It's weird. It's extremely talky. It's essentially a movie about friendship and age and art, and a lot of it exists in just sort of weird, sometimes very pretentious conversations.
It struck me as like a Soderbergh take on a Nancy Meyers movie, if that makes sense.
Give me an example.
I'm thinking of like as Good as It Gets or,
okay.
You know what I mean? Like Meryl Streep's in a lot of those movies. A lot of these actresses are in a lot of these movies. They tend to focus on the older ladies and their interior life and it had some of those vibes, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the presentation of it was very Soderbergh-y. You know what I mean? Like the visuals and sort of the, I think some of the editing, certainly the way it used the jazz soundtrack.
Yep.
Also, and I thought it came out to something very interesting and really unexpected, honestly.
Agreed.
Like I didn't see the twist.
Me neither.
And more than the twist, I didn't really see the meaning, you know, that was ultimately going to be derived from the film coming necessarily until the very end. And I think a lot of that made sense to me. And I want to shout out because obviously, look, Meryl Streep's great, you know, because she's Meryl Streep. But I also think she's doing some roles out of the Streep archetype, you know what I mean? As that sort of like like the uber successful iconoclast is kind of a thing I feel like we've seen her do.
Yeah, but there's a weird note of like just an old lady who can't stop being sort of insufferably pretentious, but also wonders what it would be like if she wasn't.
Yeah, and it's not like it's she's playing the same character as like she was in The Devil Wears Prada,
right?
Per se,
it's more you complicated know what I mean? Than that. Yeah,
yeah, but there is she does share a certain sort of aloofness,
yes.
I think, with that character.
Yep. No, I mean, look, this is not the role where you finally realize Meryl Streep is an amazing actress, but she of course is very good. Lucas Hedges is great.
Lucas Hedges is great. That was the point I was trying to get to. I thought Lucas Hedges was really excellent as sort
but you
of
know
the,
what?
The like, outsider in this film.
He was excellent, and just as like a nice young man, you know, just like playing a nice young man, living his life. I thought he was excellent, but Diane Wiest I thought was sort of the star of this. I just thought it was such an interesting sort of quiet but thoughtful performance that I don't know why, but I found her excellent. And, you know, everybody's good. Candace Bergen, everyone was good in this. But I did particularly enjoy the Diane Wiest character. And so, okay, when you say the meaning that it led to, I guess we're spoiler alerting now. How do you see that?
Like, you know, when, all right, so Meryl Streep dies.
Yeah. Know?
And obviously this is like, you're going on this cruise and it's sort of, you feel like, I felt like this was a moment where, it seemed like this was kind of a film about, you know, success and, the way that sort of alienates you
right. And
leaves people in your wake. And then, I think as she passes and, you know, they sort of start to reevaluate what, you know, what their friendship really meant to each other.
Yeah.
It just seemed much more about maybe treasuring who we are. You know what I mean? And the things that we do over the differences, if that makes sense.
I think that's sort of exactly how I read it. And again, we're really spoiling now, but, you know, the very end of the movie is just Lucas Hedges sort of sitting down in her study and all of a sudden seeming to have like a realization and sort of smiling to himself, and the movie ends. And my wife like at that moment said aloud, "What? No."
Well, I thought that scene was really interesting. Just that
so did I.
Particular little montage, because like you don't see Meryl Streep's character as necessarily like a loving, nurturing person. You sort of see her in the fog of,
yes,
I am a great writer, right? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I think that's the way a lot of the world sees her. But then you realize like her as nurturing aunt. And particularly for Lucas Hedges' character as family,
yes,
right, where the rest of his family he really felt like had let him down in all these different ways.
Yeah,
she was the reliable one for him, and you can see him kind of piecing that all together, and it was very real. And that was I found that montage super touching.
So did I. My wife and I did not agree on that, but I thought it was interesting because. There could have been like a proper end of some kind that's put more of what Lucas Hedges shared in his face into words and actions, and we could have seen some sort of more overt revolution. What's the word I'm looking for? Oh my God, I'm having a horrible brain fart moment. Resolution. Is the word. That could have happened. I don't think it would have added anything for me. And
I felt like it was so perfect because it was.
Yeah.
They were all moments that you saw in this film already. You
exactly.
know what I mean?
And
but
I thought,
none of them were moments that I think you really took note of as they were happening. You know what I mean?
Right. And when he sort of smiles and like the thing I thought of was the scene where really, I think, is the most emotional and honest that you see Meryl Streep in the whole movie, where he tells her, "Oh, I tried to make out with your agent and it didn't go well."
Yeah.
And she's like, and he says something like, you know, oops, I wish I hadn't have done that or something. And she's like, no, don't wish you hadn't done that. And she gives this whole speech about like, that's life. And like, it's emotional life. And what's more important than that, essentially, is what she says to him. Like, you, the sum of these emotional moments is your life, more or less.
Right.
And mm-hmm. I felt like what Steven Soderbergh was saying to us is when he sat down at the desk and sort of suddenly understood that, like, this as much as anything was his family home, and this woman was his family. Like, that he understood that, like, even in loss, like, this is my emotional life, and I'm living it. And I just thought that was so cool.
I think there's something else going on there, too, in that, you know, I mean, Soderbergh is a filmmaker. He's an artist, right? Like, these, you know, surrounded by people who are actresses, you know, and actors, and they're artists, right? And I think it's easy to hear someone like Alice Hughes, like, prattle on and think that they're being pretentious. And I think he's also saying, like, in Meryl Streep's character, I think, makes this case at some point or another, that, you know, as by nature as a writer, right, like, she is an observer and an imparter of the human condition, you know, and I think that she really did deeply understand people's emotional life and what resonated and what was important.
And not only
and valuable
that,
in
right,
that,
not only
you know?
Yeah, not only understood but took it very seriously. And I think that's where you become pretentious. But it's also where, again, like, where the emotions live. So it's a tricky line to walk. It's a tricky thing to balance. One of my best friends is a writer, a fiction writer, and he kind of talks like that sometimes, and sometimes you want to punch him. You do. But as long as it's sincere, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's where I think Meryl Streep, you know, does bring her special brilliance to this, is like, there are times in this movie where you're like, just speak English, you insufferable woman. but you also sort of understand that she can't. Right?
Yes.
Like, this is how she observes and experiences the world.
I'm kind of interested, though, in what you thought, through that lens of the character, the author who is, you know, kind of like a Dean Koontz or like a Michael Crichton, you know what I mean? Like the guy who writes 100 books and they're all super successful and, you know, and he cranks them out every 3 months and he has an outline, but he is like the sort of like,
she says that's longer than I thought.
I know, right? But he turns out to be a person of like real kind of like kindness and depth and warmth and really understanding and like totally gets her books, you know what I mean?
Well, and I think that's where like Meryl Streep has a lesson to learn, right?
Right.
Is like that's her shock at this, you know, man that she considers to be sort of a cheap salesman also has a rich interior emotional life and is thoughtful and, you know, interesting as a person. And he has
also had a great understanding of the book business, I think.
Not only the book business, but also of literature, right? Like, I think, you know, we all probably, anyone who's pretentious enough, and I know I am, to shit on, you know, airport bookstore fodder, like, I would imagine most of those guys are probably like that. Because you have to be, you got to understand the stuff to be an author, even if what you're authoring is not Faulkner, you know?
Yeah. I think everybody has a level somewhere, right? There's some point of book in which you start shitting on it.
Yeah.
Right? Definitely. Whether it's romance novels or like Twilight or Dan Brown or something, or Michael Crichton or whatever.
Right. But I mean,
you know what
Crichton
I mean? Depending
Brown.
On your level, at some point there's a level where you start shitting on it. By the way, I love Michael Crichton. I'm not.
So do I.
I'm not
and
that
I,
person.
And I love so. The Da Vinci Code too. I read it in a couple days. Like all that's yeah. great. But I do think, I just mean I would be a dick about it in the same way she, not quite to that degree, but like that's sort of how I think about it in my head. But I would imagine that in reality, you know, Dean Koontz and Michael Crichton and Philip, what's his face, who writes all the murder mystery ones, like they probably have libraries filled with literature that they understand extremely well, you know?
Agreed. Well, and like, you know, I mean, Stephen King is like that for some yeah. people. And I think that, you know, there's enough of Stephen King in the world talking about all sorts of things that you get that he understands a lot about art. You know what I mean? Although I think, you know, I don't know, maybe he's ascended to a different level
yeah,
or in
I
terms
think...
of people get the level of craftsmanship. There's a certain respect for Stephen King, whether you like his books or not.
I think that's know? Right. I gained yeah. that respect when I read the Dark Tower series, which is sort of his fantasy epic. That is not horror and it is fantastic.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about Sound of Metal?
I do. This was the one I was the least excited to watch.
Oh, okay. So this is the one I was the most excited to watch. And it turned out to not be the movie that I was expecting at all, if that makes sense.
it was not the movie I was expecting at all either, but I did like it.
I did too. I liked it. I liked it quite a bit, actually.
Yes, agreed.
And I think the thing, it's still the thing that... you know, was the biggest seller for me coming in, even though I thought this was going to be much more a movie. I mean, I get why the movie's called what the movie's called, but you know, when the movie's called Sound of Metal, like I'm thinking about this is going to be the life of a, you know, you're getting a lot more the life of a touring rock band than you do. It's not really much about that at all, to be honest, but yeah. what is still there and what brought me to it is, you know, I'm going to watch Riz Ahmed stretch out an act for 2 hours, and to me there's pretty much a floor, right? Like that's going to be at least this entertaining, right? You know what I mean? Because I think he's really great, and this is a really excellent performance.
Yeah, he's tremendous. And this movie is it's all on his back. Feels like 75% of it is just him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if he's in every scene, but it kind of feels like he's in every scene.
Right, and just like a lot of those scenes are, I mean, a surprising number of those scenes are like quiet montages of him doing stuff, you know? I also thought there was going to be more rock band in this. I don't think I realized. I mean, I knew it was about his hearing, but I didn't realize this was a movie about deaf culture more than anything else. It is a topic I find particularly interesting and also terrifying as someone who, you know, virtually all of my identity is built around hearing and saying things.
Which has put you right in sort of that character, right? Like his
yeah.
life is all around.
Well, and I
too,
played the drums
know?
Most of my yeah. young life. I mean, so I actually had, you know, this is the scariest part. The way they did his hearing loss, a very mild version of that happens to me semi-regularly.
And you have tinnitus?
I think it's probably tinnitus. I've been told my ears are fine. Because I've gone to the doctor about it. I don't have like bad TMJ or anything like that, so it's not extreme tinnitus, but every now and then one of my ears just goes high pitch ring and sort of fades out for a minute. So like the prospect of that happening and then it never coming back is something I have certainly thought about, but also like seen on screen, I very much felt his terror. And other than that, this really comes down to just like it's a movie about a guy and his sort of emotional journey. And I just think, you know, when you have a guy who does it as well as Riz Ahmed, that's a winner pretty much every time.
Yeah, and I found the journey really affecting, and I really thought that they were smart about bringing you into that experience of losing your hearing. It was pretty visceral in a lot of ways.
Yeah, the way it was shot, the way they sort of went from the hearing world to the unhearing world. I agree. It was really well done.
Yeah. You know, and like there are scenes, right, where they're at the table and you're kind of in his space as he's picking up on these people signing, and then they sort of pan out and you hear what it really sounds like, where it's like this sort of busy table with everybody's hands moving and occasional noises that no one can hear kind of flying out. And yeah, it was really fascinating look into that world. And it was so like heartwarming as he eventually starts to adapt to it along with these kids who were learning to be deaf. And yeah. Like,
yeah,
you know, and you're sort of watching this guy who I don't think as a character, right, had a lot of like emotional growth was not necessarily a strong suit.
Yeah. In fact, you know what I mean? I really taking to it, that, right?
You know,
like it really took him a long time to embrace the concept of emotional growth.
Yeah. Yeah. You were talking about your situation, right? Like the one thing that, as much as you can sort of relate to this character, the one thing you would not have done, right, is kept on playing shows after that first doctor's meeting.
No.
Correct?
Yeah, no, that's true. No, I mean, I'm not crazy, but I also don't like that music and I'm not covered in tattoos. So there's a lot of things different.
Yeah. By the way, while we're on this, this is like if I have a note, you could tell, right, that Riz did the whole thing of like, I'm gonna learn how to play the drums for this, and like
but he couldn't. But he couldn't, and they had to cut away anytime they wanted to do real drumming.
Yeah, and the guitar playing was like non-existent. Like, I don't know. I thought that actress did great. With the exception of her like being on stage pretending to play the guitar.
So, I don't understand also why they didn't. I don't know. They chose to tell the story they did. I've like that. I wouldn't go see that band, and I don't know why anybody would, but you know, somebody would. And yeah, they did not like the worst one was when he sat down in the, like, he set the drums up after, you know, he'd been at the deaf camp for a while. And I guess he was getting ready to sell them, and he starts banging the drums, and it's just bad. And then they like cut to the outside of the trailer, and all of a sudden the like bitchinest metal drum solo you've ever heard plays, you know?
Yeah, fair enough.
there was some stuff like that that was tough. Like Miles Teller in Whiplash could have fooled me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't Riz think Ahmed you could not
make Whiplash without really, you know, like you're making Whiplash and the first thing is like, okay, what are we doing about intensive drummer camp for whoever plays this? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
right?
Totally. Like, and so. Yeah, that wasn't the point here, but you're right. Yeah. That was the one flaw.
But yeah, I really, I enjoyed this movie. And I would also say, like, I thought that the scenes, with Lou's dad,
yeah,
were really interesting and surprising.
You know what was cool about everything we've talked about so far? Not so much the next movie, the next and final film we will discuss, but these ones, like, pretty much all the characters in the three things we've talked about, Euphoria, Let Them All Talk, and The Sound of Metal, they're pretty much everybody's doing their best.
Yeah.
You know? No one's just like an unrepentant asshole. Like, people make mistakes, things go wrong, but like everyone is a decent human sort of trying their hardest. And like maybe it's 2020 getting to me or whatever, but I found it incredibly refreshing to just kind of like at least at some level respect and like the characters that I'm watching.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like that, the mileage varies. Like Rue is obviously a disastrous mess, but nevertheless, she's like a decent human being just trying to make her way in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think Rue at her core would like to be a good person.
Yeah. Right. She's a drug addict. But like, and that's what I mean. I'm not saying everyone's perfect by any stretch, but like, there's no evil in any of these movies, really.
Yeah, I would say that's fair. Would you say that there's evil in I'm Your Woman?
Yeah, it's not on screen a lot, but yeah.
Are you talking about Eddie, per se? Sorry, if you haven't seen you know what I'm talking about.
I'm talking about basically everybody. Everyone in this movie that you're aware of who does not appear on screen is a piece of shit. Right?
But I think everybody who's on screen
is
they're all people who do bad things, but because they have no other option. But
agreed. No, you're right. I mean, that it describes all the main characters in I'm Your Woman as well. And by the way, again, I know I said this earlier, like, I really liked this. I really thought. And this also was not exactly what I was expecting.
This was going to be like, what was that movie? I think we talked about it with Elizabeth Moss and like Tiffany Haddish and they were like, it was like in the 70s.
I don't think we did talk about that, but I know what you're talking about. But something like that, or like Widows or something, right?
Melissa McCarthy was the other one. They have the third one in that.
Yeah, and they're like mob wives who like go on a killing spree, sort of a thing.
Right. I kind of thought it was gonna be like that, and like if you want to see Ms. Maisel shoot a guy, that's in this movie.
But yeah, I guess it is.
It was not the
kitchen.
Front,
is the movie you're talking crime about?
Crime caper. Yes, the kitchen. That is
and
exactly
no, we did not talk about it because I never watched
expecting.
It. I never watched that, but I do want
to. Oh, really?
To. And yes, that is what I was expecting. Having not watched
this movie
it.
Is much better than The Kitchen, in my personal opinion.
Well, having not seen The Kitchen, I won't say that, but I will say this movie is a much more thoughtful and quieter film than I expected it to be, or than I imagined The Kitchen to be.
I mean, it is at times quite dark, you know.
It's incredibly dark, but there's very little on-screen violence.
Correct.
I mean, there's a couple of really violent scenes, but almost everything, even in like, you know, the second biggest, what you might call action sequence of the film, none of the violence happens on screen. And that to me is the essence of this movie, and my wife read me a review that I thought hit this out of the park, and I wish I remembered who had written it. But like, what this movie does is actually tell the story of the undeveloped mob wife character in every single stupid mafia movie we've ever watched.
Right, like every Scorsese rip. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But in but like. Just like her, we're not really involved with most of the violence. You know, just like her, we don't really know what's going on with the criminal element or how they're doing their schemes or even what they do for a living, right. Really. And instead, we actually get to live with the emotions that she goes through, which, of course, are incredibly complex and really have never been looked at.
Yep, and the mess that gets left behind, right?
Yeah.
From the consequence side of all this violence, right?
There's sort of like two generations of it, right? I mean, not generations, but two iterations of this violent cycle.
Yeah. Do you think that Eddie made the right call in keeping this from her?
Man, probably. Well, I mean, what? But I don't know how I'm supposed to answer that. From his perspective, yeah. Right? I mean...
Well, yeah. I mean, ultimately, right? He's the one that made that decision for her, right?
Well, I mean, and obviously that robs her of agency and, like, in the real world is a terrible thing, but this man is a criminal.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it seems like there's a real benefit to her, is, I guess what I'm saying. Like, it sucks that, you know, it really sucks that he lied, but I also kind of get why, you know what I mean?
So, yeah, no, of course, of course. But, but you know, if you're her, you also, I mean, that's what's so interesting about this, right? Is like, this particular woman was happy to not ask the questions. I mean, she really was.
Yeah.
And I think in some ways would have been happy to never know this stuff. But also, you know, I managed to both process and handle the situation, which in a way that plays is pretty realistic, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, other than that, she got real good with that gun.
Did she, though?
She shot that dude right between the eyes when the time came.
Okay, but right,
remember her shooting the can?
But she was a foot away.
You're right. She was fairly close. I'll give you that.
I mean, you're right.
She was like, pretty close to that can, though, too.
Yeah, but the difference between 1 foot and 15 feet is night and day. I don't know. Yeah. Yes, it was a particularly perfect between-the-eyes shot. Like, it might have been more believable if it went in through the cheekbone, but, like, I believe she could hit the head from the back seat of the car.
Maybe. I really loved my guy from The Wire.
Oh, Frankie Faison?
Yeah.
He is so good. He's so good. And honestly, I thought Cal and his wife were excellent as well. And
yeah, me too.
I don't think I've seen either of them before.
I think I have, but I couldn't really, I didn't IMDb. It was one of those things where I was like, right. Oh man, I really should. Amazon is great about the,
yeah, you just pause it.
Yeah. By the way, did you notice that it took three babies to play the baby?
Oh, was it three?
Three babies. Yeah.
We, the wife and I immediately noticed there were two because one of them had a weird hair deal that made it look like he was growing payas.
So you're in baby world, so you'd notice the detail on the babies.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Well, really, my wife noticed it and pointed it out, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's definitely a different baby.
Yeah, there's one that's credited as Additional Harry.
Additional Harry. So there's Harry, and Additional Harry?
You're correct.
That's amazing. It's particularly amazing because the baby had a very distinct face.
He did.
The baby looked like Mickey Rooney. So they must have had the one face baby for sure.
The baby did look like Mickey Rooney. Yeah.
I mean, I think a lot of babies probably look a little like Mickey Rooney, but this felt special.
Yeah. So I enjoyed this a lot. It's not fun, though. So
it's not action.
Like a fun movie over the holidays, this is not it.
Maybe try action, The Kitchen. I've heard it's pretty good.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, and that's actually something I would say about this and The Sound of Metal is like the Billboard / short preview might have scared you away. But these are both really thoughtful, emotional movies about people more than they are anything else. Like The Sound of Metal is not really about thrashing metal and a crazy rock band story, and this is not really about the mafia and gunplay. You know, they're movies about people in difficult situations.
Yeah. I was listening to John Hamm on Simmons last week. I don't know if you caught that. But he was talking about the movie business now and how like The Town was a $40 million movie that came out right, not that long ago. And even that at the time was seen as a great risk and that it would never get made today. Right. Or not, maybe it might get made, but he's like, the only movies that exist now essentially are, you know, 5 million to 1 million. And they're probably going to air on Netflix, or 250 million. Like that's, and they're just not making a lot of movies in between. And so I feel
listen,
your point.
I respect John Hamm, and that he's not wrong. But I'm fucking real sick of hearing that from people in the, especially hundred millionaires in the movie business. Like, those are decisions. Those are decisions that get made. And like,
by the way, he wasn't complaining. I know,
and that's why I'm saying
it.
I'm not commenting on John Hamm.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just like, I don't want to hear about how if your movie can't come out in the theater, it's going to ruin the movie business. I don't want to hear about how none of the movies you really like get made anymore. Like, especially from people who have the opportunity to do things about that. Because honestly, I am seeing those movies. They're just on Netflix and Amazon and HBO Max. I'm seeing it.
Yeah, like that was my point.
I know.
Yeah.
But that's why it's just like, I hear you, but that's first of all, that's old news, okay? That's turn of the century news. That's been done happened.
Yeah.
And somehow the great filmmakers with great artists working with them and actors who are willing get these movies made. It still happens. So Cry Me a River that you don't think we can make The Town again, but like,
again,
I know that's not what he's saying, but just to use that example, like, I don't want to hear it. Let the market, will take care of. This is actually a place where the free market will solve the problem.
Right. And to, and you know, not to get into Ham because it was about Ham, but it is credit. He's making a lot of $5 million and even $1 million movies.
Exactly.
He's making the movies he wants to make.
I know.
And they're coming out and, you know, people get to see them. I think it was frustrating for him because the question came about like, hey, you're in these movies that like people watch on airplanes and go, hey, you know, that was really good. You know, he's like, yeah, I'm kind of that guy now. And then he sort of tried to explain why that was, you know, like, hey, I did right. This movie, it came out against Godzilla and it got crushed and, but it was really good. And, you know, eventually people are finding it. And I like that, you know, it was kind of started in that context. But my original point of that was like, yeah, like I think there are a lot of these stories, these people stories now that are on the streaming services and we're richer for it. And I'm hoping that part of what we can do with this podcast is point people to the good versions of those, because there is,
exactly.
You know, yes, those movies are there for you now. Like you can see a lot of them, but you have to fish them out of this endless sea of choices. Right. So,
right. I think that's a more interesting conversation. And yeah, that is a challenge. And that's exactly what I hope we're doing, you know. But
yeah,
I just like the this movie or that movie can't get made anymore thing. It's just a paper tiger to me. I mean, it's just not true. It might be harder. It might be different. But like,
it's not that the movie can't get made. It's just not going to be in movie theaters anymore. That's, I think, the right.
That might be true. But yeah. You know what? That's okay with me. It really is. It's totally okay with me if, you know, your $30 million movie can only make a profit of $10 million now. God forbid. Like, you're turning 30 million into $40 million in a year and a half. That's a right. good investment. So chill.
If it works. And but the thing I think that he's saying is there is no $30 million movie anymore, right? There's no $30 million movie. It's down to five, right?
Have we considered the possibility?
I do wish maybe that existed. You know, I do wish that maybe that existed.
But honestly, someone's going to have to show me the movie that eliminates, because it's sure as shit ain't The Town.
Maybe. When was the last time you saw a movie like The Town? In a theater.
An action movie that was a little bit cleverer than the average? Like, what are we talking about? The Town is not The Godfather. It happens all the time.
Okay.
Like,
But even Scorsese's working on Netflix now. I don't know.
Okay. The Irishman came out in theaters, too. It sucked, but it came out in theaters. And certainly somebody thought that was a thoughtful action movie, right? I mean, like, that. These movies still happen. Like, I don't know. I almost want to Google action flicks from the last 5 years to show you 16 versions of The Town.
What's the difference? I might take you up on that.
See, to me,
because I feel like the action movie that makes the theater now is Jason Statham, or you know something on the more Fast and Furious or the Liam Neeson sort of pulpy thing more than a movie like The Town. But I can be wrong about that.
But think about that. What really separates that Liam Neeson movie from The Town?
Words.
Yeah, writing and acting.
Words, characters, yeah.
It's writing and acting. So
yeah.
That could just get somebody better to write the Liam Neeson movie. It'll still, like, you know what I'm saying?
I'm assuming the extra money in The Town from, you know, random, from, you know, baseline Liam Neeson flick, right? That's all cast, right? The town had a lot of famous people in it.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, do it for scale, John Hamm, and maybe this can happen. I don't know.
Yeah. You know, I don't want to shoot at Fenway Park ain't cheap, I'm guessing. But that's
sure, but you don't have to do that. Like, this is my point. You could write a good movie that doesn't shoot at the most expensive location in Boston. I don't know.
I could be wrong. Let's get off the town. I am curious, though. Like, how many of your friends or people that, like, are you think you'll ever have a conversation about any of the movies we talked about today with anyone other than me?
My wife and
your
parents.
Your wife not included. Yeah, because I'm assuming you watch these together.
Yeah, a lot of them. My parents, I will sometimes talk about this stuff with and would even without the podcast. It's a weird time to answer that question because I'm not like
because you're not right. You're not running into people and yeah. whatever. But I just don't know that people are seeing these things. You know what I mean?
You know, well, and I assume this is what you mean. Like, I truly don't know. Like, not I don't know if people are seeing this. Like, I don't think people are seeing this. I honestly have no idea, one way or the other.
Yeah, I suppose that's true.
So I don't know. I don't know what to make of that. But, like, I have a couple of friends who are in the movie business that I talk to about stuff like this pretty regularly. You know, I definitely have a couple of my friends that I do, you know, 30-minute to 3-hour phone calls with every couple of weeks. We'll talk about stuff like this. So, yeah. A bit.
I just
anyway.
Feel like
it's not the same, but because it's not that water cooler conversation, but also we're not having any water cooler conversations.
Right.
So, like, I don't know.
But it's like when the Oscars come out and right, like there's so many people that you hear go, I don't know these movies. Like, you know what I mean? And most of those are not that hard to find. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But don't you think that's just about people having bad taste and choosing not to watch good movies? I mean,
I think maybe some of it's them having bad taste, but I also just think they're not like, it takes a little digging to get to find these movies to watch them. Right. And I don't think people are doing that necessarily.
Maybe. But also if you're someone who's like getting on Netflix and Amazon Prime Video pretty regularly, like they'll tell you what's coming and they'll.
Yeah. But what you see, I think is really based on what they think you're going to watch. You know what
it
I mean?
Is. It so. Is. But you know, and look, we're probably missing a world of stuff somewhere, but I feel like I see most of the things I ought to see. and 25% of that is because you and I are seeking it out and throwing it at each other. But 75% is because it's there for me. And like my eyes are open. You have to have your eyes open, but I think it's all there for you.
Yeah, I hope that's right. And I hope lots of people out there have their eyes open. And I feel like maybe that's a good place to leave this particular episode and jump into homework.
Yeah.
All right, so we are going to do Best of 2020 next week. I don't know if we'll do full top 10s. Definitely with movies, it's hard to do a top 10 in this year. But we will run through some of our favorites of 2020, and that'll take up a bunch of the show. And then we had a listener suggestion.
Yeah.
Right, which I think was pretty cool. So we're going to try to do that. And I want to make sure it's Brandon, right? Brandon Arnold.
That sounds right.
Yeah. Texted and asked us to watch Wayne on Prime. So we're gonna check that out for next week's show.
Feel free to tweet at the Kolsky or Madden on Air and we'll at least consider your ideas.
Yeah.
This is
something that we just like to know stuff that you're watching and interested in because it helps us with the discussion we just had, right?
Totally. So. But also I know Brandon has tweeted us before, and also I was unaware of this show, and when I looked at the description, it looks like it's right in our wheelhouse, so I'm pretty excited, actually.
Yeah. So one thing I'd say is if you've made it this far, you have some idea of the stuff we like to watch.
That's true. That's true. Brandon is finally putting his hard-earned knowledge to use.
So we do appreciate that. And I guess I should mention, you know, rate and review the podcast if you're somewhere where that is allowed.
Yeah.
Because that stuff helps. I'm not really sure how it helps, but every podcast I listen to will tell you that it helps. So I'm going to roll with that.
Yeah, no, like if we were tracking listenership or trying to make money off this, I'm sure that would be helpful. Yes.
Yeah, so do that. And then we'll be back on Thursday with a big challenge show.
Oh, man. Yeah. I'm even more fired up after I listened to Anissa and Tori. I think I said it was maybe Cam and Anissa or Cam and Tori last time. No, it is Tori and Anissa, who are fast friends, apparently, breaking down each episode of the challenge on the official MTV Challenge podcast. So, you know, put that in the queue, too, if you're as much of a challenge nut as we are.
I'm going to check that out. And I have to say, I mean, you know me. I am a huge Cam fan.
Yep.
But I think Anissa and Tori is those might be ideal for
a podcast.
Doing a pod like
this. You get a little more of the straight dish from them.
Yes, and I think they're those are two veterans that I think also really understand the game, and are I feel like intimately connected to almost everyone in every house that they're in. Right.
I mean that's true as well. They're really those two are right in the thick of things, whereas like Cam has potentially been more of a side character, and she's just a lot younger in the game.
Right. And she's also very specific, right? Like, she'll get in an alliance, and either you're with her or against her.
Right.
As we saw in the first episode.
She takes no prisoners.
Choose wisely on that score. Yeah, man. Like I said, I can't wait to see what happens with CT. So we thank everybody who's jumping on the challenge with us. My brother and his wife are in for this season.
Bring the whole family. It's family television.
So I'm excited
folks.
About that. Yeah, for sure. All right. We will see you on Thursday.
Okay, bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.